5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You are listening to Flowing with Famous, the All Fresno podcast where we talk about Fresno. I am Joshua Teehee, aka Famous Whitewater, for those who have listened. And with me, as always, Mike C of the Dorktown Network of Podcasts. Mike.
Hey, Josh, I'm with you.
Good.
I'm here. I'm holding up.
Nice. And we have guests today.
Oh, wait, what? Yeah. Nobody ran this by me, but okay.
Yeah.
Whatever,
well,
man.
This is like, I feel like this is like the, like if the, if we were a sitcom, this is like the Halloween episode, you know, where like it happens every year and you just expect it. And then it's like so always so good when it happens. And it's like, yeah, I remember last time. So we have the Sweet Fest guys on to talk about Sweet Fest. It's a little different than normal. Normally we have both Brian and Rocky. Rocky couldn't be here, so he found a stand-in. But I'll let you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves, and then we'll jump into the chat.
What's up, you guys? Hey, this is Brian, and thank you very much for having us.
Yeah.
And this is Matt Hackney. I'm the sweeted version of Rocky Rodriguez.
The sweet.
Exactly.
I like that.
Oh.
Yeah, Rocky's up in Yosemite and didn't think he'd have a good enough internet connection to dial in today. But so Matt's his stand-in.
Proxy. All right.
I'll take that excuse. So, that's our first I'm in Yosemite. I can't make an excuse. That's a good original.
That's a pretty good excuse.
Remember that. Anybody that deals with Rocky in his business dealings, like, remember, like, if he uses that Yosemite excuse on you, he was like, dude, he uses that all the time.
I've heard that one before.
The old Yosemite excuse. Oh, I'm in Yosemite. No signal.
You're just always in Yosemite. Yeah. So the reason that you guys are here should be obvious to people, but maybe it's not. There is another Sweet Fest coming up. And our listeners know what Sweet Fest is, but I don't know. Maybe someone's listening to this and hasn't heard about it before. So maybe you want to explain a little what it is, run it down, and when the next one's happening. And then we'll talk about why it's going to be different. Which is also probably obvious to people, but
definitely. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, first of all, too, just thank you guys for having us on the show. I know you don't normally do guests, but you know, it's kind of a tradition. I don't know how many years it's been now that we come on and we're sort of October, November guest.
Yeah.
But we certainly appreciate
We've been
it. You
planning
guys,
this for a whole year, Brian. We've been planning this day. Every year, as soon as we're off, we're going to start planning for 2021.
Awesome. Yeah, we can plan this episode, but not plan to actually do a suite. So there you go.
Someday, damn it, someday. But yeah, thanks for having us on. And the Sweet Fest is, if for people out there who don't know, Sweet Fest has nothing to do with Swedish people or Kingsburg or anything like that.
Yeah,
there is a Swedish festival that happens in Kingsburg, and it's awesome, and you should check that out. But this is not that. This is referring to Sweeted films, and so if you've ever seen the movie "Be Kind, Rewind," that came out back in 2008. Jack Black was in it. Mos Def, Danny Glover. That's kind of where this concept comes from. And a Sweeted film is basically just like a summarized homemade version of your favorite movie. So this is a film festival that me and Rocky and Matt and several other folks have been helping us do for many years now. Started doing it in 2008, right when Be Kind Rewind came out. And we just encourage people to like get creative and like experience what it's like to make your own short film. You don't have to have like any experience making videos. It was a lot different back in 2008. Not everybody had a smartphone in their pocket, but now most people do. So you got no excuse. It's super easy. Pick up your phone and just, think about what your favorite movie is. and just try to remake it in under 5 minutes or less with just whatever you have lying around the house. And right now, most people stuck in the house can't go out and do as much as we used to be able to. So it's a good excuse to get creative and have some fun. You know, so you submit your film to us. And normally, in typical years, we'd all be at the Tower Theater watching our films up on the big screen. Can't really do that this year due to the pandemic, but we'll do the next best thing. We'll do a live stream on Friday, December 11th at 7 p.m. on Facebook and on YouTube. And we'll get together and we'll have some fun in the chat and we'll do some interactive stuff and we'll watch the films together just like we normally would, but just virtually this time.
Awesome. Are you expecting... So I would think that right now would be a perfect fucking time for Swedes because of like everything I see people doing like on TikTok and on Instagram. Like I see people just doing all of this crazy stuff that's really cool that to me seems like it would be perfect, like that Sweden would just be the next or a different kind of
yeah, it's like the same skill set that's the TikTok sure. generation. Definitely yeah. It's like every time I see these TikToks, I'm like, that's Sweden. They're Sweden. Like,
yeah. And I mean, like Sweden is not a new concept. It's really just like parodying something that you love. So, I mean, it's just a different word for something that we've always sort of done and we'll always continue to do into the future. And yeah, there's like some hilarious remakes that have come out just in the last 6 months of people as people have been kind of quarantining at home. I mean, yeah, you saw everyone's Quibi had the big Princess Bride remake, the entire film sort of thing. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even like the everyone's been doing what's the dude on the skateboard with the Fleetwood Mac song mm-hmm. and everyone does you know, like that's a Swede to me, you know, right. is that when people are remaking it with, you know, their own whatever drinks and you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's just sort of taking something you love and remixing it and putting yourself into it. Yeah.
So a couple of things. One, I want to talk, but we'll do this as I want the other Swede Fest. That's where is it? Pittsburgh or something? Because I actually got there's a couple of ones. They sent me here in Fresno. Like their PR trying to pitch me a story on their stupid Swede Fest. I can't, and it's like called the Festival for Sweded Films or some. So anyway, we'll talk about that in a second. But before that, let's talk about this thing that you guys did with Netflix for one of their upcoming series, or maybe the series is already airing. I don't know. Anyway, they kind of pulled you guys in to help with a trailer or something.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, you want to talk a little bit about this?
I mean, just from my perspective of it is, I get this phone call from Rocky, like, you know, it's like 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night, and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing this weekend?" He's like, "You go. I mean, I've got this vacation plan. I'm gonna go head to the Grand Canyon." It's like, well, Netflix reached out and they want us to make a Swede, so I guess we'll have to do it without you. I'm like, well, hold on, just wait a moment. And I put off my trip to go and we made this Swede in a week. So he reached out to a few people and we had like a little Zoom meeting. I want to say it was like Wednesday or Thursday night, and we talked out every shot that we needed to do. And Rocky and Brian kind of walked us through what Netflix wanted from us, and it's this barbarians TV show. Is it in German, Brian? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think it's in German. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so like, yeah. So we watched this clip they sent us and it was going to be us and a couple other teams. We're each going to take portions of a trailer and suite it. And it made it a lot easier for us that we didn't have to also edit it. We just had to get the shots and
send them off. And
yeah. So it was not as much work, but almost like, but more compact. Like right. We did the whole thing in less than a week of like pitch to completion. Like we, like, you know, at least I got brought in on a Tuesday night, and then by Sunday, pretty much we were done. Like there was some things Monday we had to wrap up, but it was just a few days. You know, we were just turning out scenes. Like we got to the point where I think like Friday or Saturday night, and we're like, yeah, let's be done. And then we're walking out. Well, let's just do one more shot. Let's do another one. Let's get these out of the way. And we just kept shooting. And We got them.
Unfortunately, there was a couple shots that the production company Netflix came back and they're like, "This is a little too good. Can you redo it? Make it a little crappier?"
No way. Seriously, they were like, "No, it looks too it looks too on point." Wow.
Yeah, that's that uncanny valley where, like, I think we finally reached with some of our effects of like, this is just, it looks like it could be in a movie,
right?
Like some of these things is like, we've lost the suited perspective of like trying to do the homemade stuff. We just did it for
looks,
real.
Yeah. It looks too, it was cool. I liked watching it because, you know, because it wasn't just you. So it was, you know, a couple of, what was it? Some people from Australia and then Japan maybe. So it was awesome to watch it and find the clip, like where your parts were, and go like, I recognize that, you know, that person, that backdrop, that, and Matt, I do believe I saw you for a quick couple seconds. Yes.
Yeah. Matt had a new scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I got to see this.
Yeah. I think I'm in about half the shots, but what's funny is when Rocky called me, he's like, "Oh, you know, we use your, you know, help for the suite, and then also there's a scene we think you'd be good for." And I just jokingly said, "Oh, is there a shirtless barbarian?" And he just breaks out into laughter of like, "Yeah, there's a shirtless barbarian." So we're, you know, I'm glad to be part of the team. Glad to you know, make it happen. But you know, since we did this in a weekend and trying to keep it kind of quiet because Netflix didn't want us to really talk about it right away, it limited the amount of actors that we could have. And so I'm in about a third of the trailer in some form. I'm in the background or my hands in a shot, or I'm wearing a crazy get up swinging a 9-iron at somebody.
Well, and just the challenge of having to do this during a pandemic too.
Right.
You know, everybody was very safe and, you know, we use masks and we, you know, when people weren't on camera, they were wearing masks. And so it was difficult just from that aspect as well.
Yeah. And what do you get for this? Like, what's the, I don't mean to be to pry, but, is it one of those things where it's like, it's the thing that you guys love to do and Netflix is, and being able to put it sort of in the sizzle reel or whatever with the other stuff that you've done?
I mean, yeah, it's that for sure. Just to be like, yeah, when Netflix calls, we answer. That sort of thing.
But we make stuff for free, right? Like we'd be making these kind of suites anyway. And so it's fun when some production house is like, "Hey, can you guys help us make this? Will you want to work with us on it?" Like, of course. Like, what are we going to pass up an opportunity like that?
And then someday Netflix is going to give you guys your own show, the Sweetie Show or something. I don't know what it'd be called, but and I would watch the shit out of that.
Hey, if Netflix is listening, that'd be great.
Yeah, you should pitch it, man. Just every week. Well, maybe a week's too. But, you know, whatever. There's a new show that where it's a suite of whatever. That'd be awesome. Or even I feel like back in the day, I don't know, HBO, Showtime, you know, they always did. What was the movie, stupid, like, movie thing that they did? Where it was Green Light or whatever, where they would like follow up.
Oh, hey, I like that
show. It could be something like that.
That was Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be great. I'd watch that. Let's get on that. Let's somebody.
We'll work on it.
Cause I think it would be really cool.
Well this isn't the first guys.
This isn't the first one of these that you've done either though, right? Like, you did some stuff for the
Today Show stuff. Was it Today Show?
Well, right, there was the Star Wars stuff. But you also did some other DVD stuff, right?
Yeah, after we did the Pacific Rim suite, we had the production company Legendary Pictures reached out and they were like, "Hey, it's going to come out on Blu-ray, can you do a couple things for us and we'll throw them up on Instagram?" And so we did that. Yeah.
But what's been the sort of the pinnacle so far?
I don't know. It'd be it's a toss up between meeting Guillermo del Toro. That was pretty awesome, at the premiere of Pacific Rim. And probably Good Morning America. Yeah, meeting Daisy Ridley and John Boyega. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was wild to watch and to see you guys. Like, that was really, like, being here and seeing that and knowing the story of how this all started and sort of the arc of what you guys are doing with the the production side outside of the festival, because I feel like the festival is one thing and it's really cool, and then there's, you know, the other thing, and sure. Watching that was, I don't know, I felt like it was really cool, like it made a Fresno boy proud, I'll say.
Well, you're too kind, but yeah, no, it was crazy. That one was crazy, Good Morning America, just because of how quickly it happened too. You know, they called us on a Sunday and they're like, we're going to fly out in a day. And then we flew back in a day. So it was just a whirlwind. But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Okay. So now let's talk about this other Swede, this Swede festival that's going around trying to pretend that it's the Swede festival. Kind of made, I didn't reply to the, so I got a PR pitch. From this festival, and you know, I can't even remember where it's from, but it's not it's someplace not in California, back east someplace, I think. And yeah, they're trying to pitch me on their Swede festival that's called, I think it's like the Festival for Swedish Films or something like that, and they're having it soon. Maybe in November sometime. And they're trying to pitch it to me like, I don't know what. And it has like all, you know, here's what the Swede. And I'm like, guys, do some research on who you're sending stuff to before you, you know, reach out, because I know a little something about Swede Fest, Sweded movies, you know.
I live in the epicenter of Swedes,
so do you know, have
Swedes,
you heard about
bro.
These guys?
What's that?
You heard, I'm sorry, I stepped over Josh's thing. Have you heard about these guys before, Josh?
This is the first time I've, yeah.
Or Brian and Matt, have you heard of these guys before?
Yeah, we've heard of them. And you know, over the years, there's been sort of sister festivals that have popped up, you know, mainly from, you know, kind of friends of ours too. but you know, we had one pop up in Tampa Bay, Florida.
That was Josh, with Will, right?
With Will.
Shout out to Will, old a briefly Flowing with Famous co-host.
That is true. Yeah.
So when Will moved back to Tampa, he took the Swede Fest with him and started one there. And I think they haven't done one in a few years, but he kept it going for 5 or 6 years. And then from there, one popped up in Palm Beach, Florida. Okay. And then we've had a couple one-offs in different places. Like there was one in New Hampshire. There's one in Scotland. There's like one in Australia. So they've been popping up. And normally people reach out to us and they're like, hey, we want to do it. Can you, you know, help us or give us any advice or anything? And so we typically chat with people. But this one in Pittsburgh popped up like maybe 3 years ago and we never heard from them. And I, you know, I immediately reached out and was like, hey, this is cool. Like, you know, we've been doing ours over here, which I'm, you know, sure you know about, and we'd love to, you know, help you guys out or at least help promote it. And I've just heard nothing back, you know, radio silence.
Yeah.
And I reach out like every year when they do it and we hear nothing.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, because it's like, you know, obviously, like we were saying, this isn't a new thing and it's not like necessarily you have the trademark on it. Although, you know, if you look at it historically, obviously this is, you know, you were doing it at the time that the movie, you know.
And we have no ill will or anything like that. I mean, we've always said since the beginning that we encourage, you know, other people, if they want to start Swede Fests in their own cities, that's awesome. And if you need our help doing it, we're happy to like give you some advice and how we've been doing it here. It was just weird to reach out and like hear nothing.
Yeah. You would think you at least send, you know, send something back and go like, oh, hey, cool. Glad to see you. And, you know, but Well, they didn't get any press from me and the Fresno Bee, so I'll tell you that.
Well, and this year they're kind of trying to do things different with, you know, with the pandemic and everything. Yeah. The group that runs it there in Pittsburgh is like an independent movie theater.
Right, yes.
And so they normally have it in their theater, but they can't. So they're doing it online, you know, and they're trying to get entries from outside the Pittsburgh area, which is new for them. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to do this thing where they will make it into a little package, you know, 1 hour, 1.5 hour, like film basically. And then they want to distribute that to other independent cinemas across the United States. So that's cool. And I mean, like the idea of Sweeted Films spreading is cool. But it'd be even cooler if we could like work with them somehow. But,
right. Yeah. No, that was their pitch actually was pretty good. You know, and like you said, exactly as you explained it, which I think is really cool. It was funny to me because it's like, you know, you're sending it to the market that if you do any kind of, you know, type in Fresno Sweet Fest, you're going to see, you know, so
yeah.
I just found that interesting, but
I would find it. I would be very surprised if they started this thing having never heard of what we're doing.
Right. I mean, right. Because if you do, it's a simple Google search, you're going to find, you know, at least the stuff you guys have produced.
Whatever, Pittsburgh. Come on, Pittsburgh, call us.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll hook you. Like,
we're not looking to sue you or anything. Come on,
can only help.
Right. If you've seen the movie Kyrie Wine, like that's not what we're all about. Because at the end, the movie studios come in and sue everybody. Come on,
right. Yeah. So obviously you're talking, you know, you talked about people having cell phones, you know, camera phones, the technology has sort of changed. Have you seen how have the films changed? The stuff that you're seeing from people, has the quality, you know, kind of remain the same? Are people really pushing the limits of what you can do with these Swedes now?
Well, I think, certainly over the last few years, we've seen people kind of want to use special effects, you know, visual effects and, you know, computer generated effects and, you know, whatever, we'll show those, you know, we're happy to show whatever people make and send to us. But like the spirit of Sweeting is doing it all in camera, you know, mm-hmm. doing, you know, no visual effects, no tricks, you know, and that's kind of where the creativity comes from too, is you have to figure out ways to recreate something with just what you have in front of you. We've seen some of that, but I think for the most part, people stay sort of true to the spirit of what Sweeting is.
And how does this sort of fit in with like the rise of cosplay, because I feel like that's there's a really kind of clear tie to that, because you know, especially at the beginning, like cosplay was all about that same, like a similar spirit of like I'm not gonna buy my stormtrooper costume or whatever, I have to make it and I have to figure out how to put those things together. Do you feel like there's a connection there between what you guys are doing and the sort of cosplay, I don't know, whatever it is, the community that's out there for that?
I definitely think there is a connection there. I mean, cause it's all about fan culture, you know, everybody, you know, we're all movie fans. We're big movie fans, TV, comic book, you know, and this is just an outlet for kind of expressing our love for these films. And I think that's what cosplay is too. It's just a way to express your love for something. So it's very much in the same vein, I feel. You know, but instead of making a really accurate costume, you're recreating, you know, your favorite scene or the trailer or,
right,
you know, summarizing the movie. Yeah, but I think it's all related. It's all part of that fan culture.
Yeah. It's cool. Do you normally have like some sort of big reveal for the Sweet Fest for the a production that you guys have done? Or did you guys put something in place, or did the Barbarians trailer sort of supersede what you would have done for it this time?
It's probably going to be that Barbarians trailer. Okay. I don't know. We have a little bit over a month, so I don't know. We haven't talked about shooting something different, but you never know. Never say never.
We did this before a couple years ago. We had like not talked about doing one, and then suddenly a trailer came out, and we're like, "Well, I guess we got to do this." And then it was suddenly, you know, with less than a month, like we had, you know, all year to work on something. And of course, like we're the ones that run it, we still wait till the end. But you can do it. That's what's great about this is like it's all in, you know, however much time, you know, you can set aside for it. But like it's sweet. If it comes together rushed, like that just adds to the comedic factor of it sometimes.
Right.
So
right.
Corners had to be cut. And, you know,
yeah. I have been in a few suites in the past, and always it was like a day, you know, I mean, that was my part of it. And like, you know, obviously I didn't do editing or any of that stuff, but you know, in terms of like acting, it was pretty much put together in, you know, an afternoon and an evening of like, everyone getting together and like, okay, here's your lines, here's your parts, go, let's get it done, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my very first Swede was like in 2013, 2012, something like that. And I had talked to a few people about making one, and then suddenly nobody was around to work on it. And I'm like, you know what, forget it. So I got my dog and my parents' cat, and I Sweded Milo and Otis, and I did it in an afternoon. You know, I cut it all together, and I texted a friend, hey, can you strum on your guitar for 30 seconds and then just text me a video? And I looped the song, and that was it. There's my little Milo and Otis, you know, trailer. And it was just as easy enough as to grab, you know, some actors that couldn't say no in an afternoon.
Mike, are you the only one who has never done the...
I am the only one in Fresno that has never appeared in a suite. Yes, I'm trying to keep that record going.
It seems like it just seems like it would be obvious that some point you would have somehow stumbled into one, like just been at the right place at the right time.
Been like walking by and then like, oh, it's you know, it's like in, you know, Brian knows in LA, it's like in LA area, it's just like you see films being, or some TV show being shot down the street or something. You're like, oh, so that's what it's like in Fresno walking around. You just see like, oh, some sweet set going on in October, like so it's just surprising. I haven't even walked by,
right?
One, but there was a deleted Brian, myself, and Bells from Dorktown. We did a deleted scene from Empire Strikes Back once with action figures, so it's up there somewhere.
It's out in the world.
No, we vamped what we felt was a deleted scene from Empire Strikes Back involving Chewie and Lando, but.
See, that's the other thing. I feel like you could do it so easy, Mike, because you have all those, like, you could just do it yourself. Yeah, and just
I definitely
like,
thought just an action figure Swede.
Yeah.
I could definitely pull that off. That would be great. So our entries are happening now. What's the deadline for getting it entered?
Yeah, so deadline for submitting it is Sunday, December 6th at 11:59 p.m. So you have till end of the day. And you just go to our website, sweetfest.com, and there'll be a link on there with information on how to submit your film. Super easy. And yeah, we hope to see a bunch of people virtually on December 11th.
So you don't have, do you feel you don't have that? Because one of the selling points is like, hey, you get to see something you did up on a big screen of a historic movie theater. I mean, do you think is that going to hurt you? Or do you think maybe because we're all at home and we all have this technology, maybe there will actually be more entries or
I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're going to stream it. We're not just streaming it online, but it's going to be on CMAC too. So,
okay. You know,
people who have Comcast or AT&T cable at home, they'll be able to watch it on TV.
That selling point of like, you get to see your work is going to be on TV and stuff.
Being in the theater, the Tower Theater, seeing on the big screen, it's hard to replace that experience, but yeah. We're still hoping that
People maybe you can do a double feature next year if we're allowed in theaters again and just be like, this is from 2020. Here's some highlights from 2020.
I'm going to just go ahead and give you that guarantee right now that anything you submit this year, we're definitely going to show in a theater at some point.
At some point, yeah.
Hopefully next year.
Maybe you just do the drive-in situation. That'd be great.
Yeah. You guys hear about this drive-in that's popping up downtown?
I've heard about it. I have not. Mike Oz had sent me a message. And then I was on vacation or whatever, and I followed up and I haven't heard back. So it sounds awesome. I'm interested.
I've seen some stuff flying around on Fresno Instagram, you know, people sharing stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I have no other anything about it other than it's happening. And Mike Oz seems to be somehow involved, I think maybe through Fresno Street.
Outdoor screen downtown. Happening we'll be watching
from the pictures I saw. It looked like it's that parking lot right across the street from Tioga Sequoia.
Which,
okay. That would be that's great. A good that's, spot to
that's
do
cool.
it
cool yeah
yeah
that's really cool huh I wonder yeah
go ahead no go ahead finish it up
that sounds awesome.
I do you think now, right? I think Josh and I mentioned it last month, but like right now, Edwards is shut down and like is it Regal that's bankrupt or what was the thing going on with Regal that
they're not bankrupt, but they've just shut down all their screens across the United States. I think
because there's probably no movies,
to avoid
right?
going bankrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there's no new movies to show and they just, I guess the economics of it are not panning out for them. So just easier to be closed.
Because even if they're open, what they would have to do in order to meet all of the criteria and then the amount of, you know, the limitations they're putting on how many people could be in a theater. The economics of it just don't seem like they play out.
Yeah. Especially in California. I mean, which is one of the California and New York are the biggest film markets, and in California you can only have 25% of people in the theater, you know, and that's only if you're in the red tier, you know. If you're in the purple tier, you can't open at all.
Right.
Maya Theater open? I thought I'd seen that they were open.
Maya is open,
And I would
there's nothing to show. I guess.
Right. Well, that's the other thing. And then a lot of people, there are also just the fact that people don't feel comfortable still yet going to a movie theater. And so, you know, even if they were to open, a lot of people aren't going to go.
And they can only fill it with 25% capacity. So it's like,
And especially
I wouldn't feel comfortable going.
Right. And especially all, you know, with the films. But so here's a question. I mean, do you think that this is in some ways going to be like a resurgence of more independent film theaters that can operate on a smaller scale and or like drive-ins and or like, you know, alternative movie venues?
I don't think that's necessarily the way it's going to go. I mean, I feel like the pandemic's probably killing a lot of those smaller independent theaters. And when things are back to normal and there's new movies coming out, I don't know that they're going to be able to, you know, I don't know that they're going to survive this and be able to reopen.
So like Alamo Drafthouse, let's say, could they operate like as a restaurant that's showing movies? Because here's the thing. This is what people are doing. And, you know, the wineries are doing this a lot of places. Like, they're finding ways to get around the rule, you know. So, you know, a winery, some of the wineries are actually having, like, outdoor concerts and having bands come and play. But they're doing it because they're not operating as an entertainment venue. They're operating as a winery with restaurant rules or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But they can have live performance as part of that. So, you know, it would seem like a place that serves food and drinks could potentially operate at a different level with different capacity than a normal movie theater?
Yeah, I think there's certainly room there for like entrepreneurship and trying to find creative ways to be open. Like, if you're partly a restaurant and a theater, but I don't know that some of these smaller movie houses have the flexibility to be able to do that.
Right.
But I mean, if you can, more power to you. I don't know how Alamo. I know Alamo Drafthouse has a location in LA, but I'm not sure what they've been doing during the pandemic. But yeah, you would certainly think they would still be able to serve food.
Right. Well, and it seems like some of those places too, where it's like, you know, they do first run, but they also do classic kind of stuff. Yeah. And it seems like right now that would be the way to go because there's not a whole lot of movies coming out, but
sure.
And I guess the real like market is in streaming services and getting your movies there first, you know?
Yeah. I mean the pandemic's definitely been good for the streaming services, but I'm still hopeful that, that the experience of going to a movie theater is still something that people are going to want to do. You know, when it's safe. I don't think movie theaters are going anywhere. Certainly not like at the commercial level. I'm not sure how independent theaters are going to fare this, but I think movie theaters aren't going anywhere.
Right. Yeah, because Regal can just wait it out, right? Like, I mean, which is what they're doing, right? Like, they're just like shutting.
To a certain extent, but I just think, at least for me, that experience of going to the movie theater, it's hard to top that, you know?
Yeah.
It's something special.
Do you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. Like,
Do you guys think, maybe, we don't have a film commissioner in Fresno County right now, do we? Do we have a film commissioner here?
The county does have a film commissioner, yeah.
But city of Fresno,
not the
we don't have a Ray anymore.
Yeah, no,
it's all done through the county.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be, things are starting to, they're starting to figure out how to film things now with this COVID, right? Because I know the Obi-Wan series has started doing some stuff. So like, I'm just thinking like how Fresno is, I mean, it's a weird time to be talking about now, but how underutilized I think are as far as being Hollywood using us for doing stuff. I mean, have you heard of anything happening really at all?
Well, I haven't heard too much locally happening, but I think that's probably just the case because there isn't a whole lot of productions happening in general. You know, even that Obi-Wan show, I think they're using a lot of the same technology as they have with The Mandalorian, as far as using the stagecraft, you know, whether in a studio was surrounded by LED screens and they can just project the scenery within a studio environment. So that's definitely a big cost savings. You don't have to go shoot out on location anywhere. As far as like traditional production, I haven't heard too much coming into like the Fresno area, but you're definitely right that there's a lot of potential here. I mean, we have the mountains close by and we have the, you know,
there ain't no mountains. They all been burned, man. Come on.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're trying to make your own,
you have an apocalyptic like, film you want to shoot.
Yeah. You know? You'd like to make a World War III movie. You can go.
Yes, you could definitely. That is true. Yeah. Just drive up to Shaver. You'll find everything you need up there. Actually,
I was wondering because it wasn't too long ago that Captain Marvel came in and shot at the Shaver Lake there. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what that whole area must look like now where they shot. It must look entirely different.
Like, I don't know. And Matt, did you go up to the fires with your job?
For the first couple of weeks of the fire, I was there every day.
So you probably have a pretty good take on what Shaver looked like.
So like the town around the lake, a lot of it survived. Like the fire definitely got close in some areas, but they were able to save a lot of the neighborhood. Not everything was able to be saved. There's some spots where just geographically the fire just climbed quicker than they would ever been able to slow it down.
Right.
But there, you know, the town, for the most part, is all still there. You know, I know it burned through a lot of Huntington Lake.
Yeah.
I believe the fire actually got up to the edge of the lake in a lot of places.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, Shaver, they did a fairly good job of you know, the fire kind of going up and around. But an area like Meadow Lakes, Alder Springs, like it's the top of the four lane, that area, like it just literally went up and over the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Gone east and went through a lot of the neighborhoods. And
It's crazy. That's like I went up that first like kind of week, and that's exactly, you know, between like here and Shaver, it would look crazy. And then between like Shaver and Huntington, again, look kind of crazy. But Shaver itself, kind of you drove through, and if you didn't know, it'd be like, oh, okay, everything's, except for the smoke, I guess, at the time. But
yeah, I mean, I went up like the first day that it was maybe, I didn't say the first day, it was like a week and a half after the fire had started. And the area kind of near Shaver wasn't as like high of danger anymore. And to go through, I went up, you know, before the sun came up and tried to look for some hot spots, and I couldn't really find anything. And then coming back as the sun was coming up, I mean, I like had I not known that I was in Shaver, like I wouldn't be able to tell looking around. Like there's an area just below like Ockenden, like the neighborhood, where it's got a bunch of these chain markers for the logging trucks coming down to measure their load and make sure they're going to clear overpasses and things like that. And anyway, that whole area looks like abominable. Like there's no vegetation anywhere. There's just little tiny remnants of trees kind of everywhere. And it's all ash and burnt and black.
Man.
And, you know, that whole spot used to be just thick with trees and forest all around you. And now you can just see over the edge of the mountain. You know, there's
nothing, right.
Yeah. Nothing to scare it anymore. Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy to think. I mean, that's good. Why it's good that Shaver itself and a lot of that area was fine. But, it's crazy to think how long it's going to take for, you know, it won't be our lifetime before we see it even get back to some semblance of, you know, what it used to be. But
yeah, I mean, there was a fire a couple of years ago up by Huntington, on like the backside of Huntington in the Kaiser Wilderness area. Mm-hmm. And it's like the Kaiser West, like campground area that looks down towards Mammoth. Like there was a big fire all in that area. And I remember going through probably 2 years after that area had burned, and it was still all black, with like little patches of grass and things growing. But it was just nuts to drive through all the burn scars, even after a couple of years.
Right.
And that area is all burned again. So whatever had started to grow back is all just now been reset.
What's crazy is some of those burn scars actually are protecting the other, you know, like they're using some of those burn scars as like natural barriers for
fire
to keep the fire perimeter where they want it to be. So which is crazy to think, like, it's burned all the way up to where it burned before, but it's crazy. Well, enough of that crazy talk about fires. We made it through, guys. We made it through the fires. It seems like the smoke's kind of mostly
Brian now. We've basically gone through like Sweetfest, obviously, like the last film festival locally every year. How did the Fresno Film Festival and the Real Pride, it was all virtual, like you guys are doing, similar to Sweetfest?
So Fresno Filmworks, you know, they normally show first Friday of every month at Tower Theater, or second Friday, and they have been doing a couple like virtual cinema things where you can, you know, pay $10 and Filmworks gets a little money and you can watch the film for like, I think you have 48 hours to watch it. So they've done a couple virtual cinema things like that. They unfortunately just decided to postpone the Fresno Film Festival that they normally put on in November.
Okay.
So hopefully that'll be back next year.
Fresno Film Festival this November. like normal.
No Fresno Film Festival this year. And I know they're going to, they normally do the Oscar shorts in like February. So that's a very popular thing. People love to come out and watch those. So I think they're still shooting to try to do that in February, but who knows what that's going to look like.
Right. I mean, that'll be contingent on there right being now, a place for them to be able to.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to be in person or virtual, but as far as Real Pride, yeah, they normally do their festival in September, I believe. And I think they did it in October this year, and it was all virtual. So you can watch online. Yeah.
I wonder how Tower is holding up as far as the Tower Theater through all this. Is it basically like a nonprofit ownership kind of deal? I always forget how the Tower.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think the Warners is set up that way. I think Tower Theater is just it's owned by the family. And when I talked to him at the early part of the, you know, or mid part, I guess, but he wasn't very hopeful that there would be, you know, it was essentially like, if we don't get some help at some point, it's going to become storage, you know, we're going to rent it to a church or whatever, just to keep our money coming in, because they just couldn't handle it. And there had been some talk of trying to do like some outdoor concert things, because they have that parking lot, like, you know, in the back, which would be kind of nice for that. And they did concerts back there before, you know, they would do concerts back there in the day. I've seen Patrick Contreras and a bunch of people play there. You know, they used to have, I think they maybe even had the like blues thing, or the Jamaica, one of those, like, was there for a couple of years anyway in that parking lot. But that never happened. So I don't know.
Well, what's the story with the two other like restaurants that are on the outside? Didn't they, cause they have like that lounge that they took the old bar restaurant that was on the other side.
Yeah.
And up made like a gift shop and a lounge. And then painted table.
On the other side?
Yeah.
I think Painted Table still uses that. Is still in that, the one part where the Daily Planet used to be. Mm-hmm. And then the lounge. The theater had been using it kind of like as a club, you know, like, so for small, concerts and things, you know, 200 seats, 150, 200 seats, something like that. But I don't think they've done much of anything since.
I wonder if those are since pandemic, income sources so. For the theater, or like how that works. Is it like, at least those spots are being rented out?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the theater is like the big income source, you know.
I'm hoping they pull through.
I mean, that's the one I'm kind of worried about, you know. Warner's Theater too, to a certain extent, although the Warner's, you know, they do have the benefit of having tenants in the rest of their complex there. So they are at least getting that money coming in. Well, I assume, you know, but because that they're full, you know, they have a full like all the spaces there have businesses in them. So I feel probably a little bit more like, okay. Tower Theater is the one, you know, that's going to be interesting. And also, press? You know, Strummers and Fulton 55, same way, you know, like, how long can you sort of, you know, be without any kind of income coming in? I know Strummers opened the like concert side as like overflow for the restaurant, maybe. But I haven't been there, so I don't really know exactly how that works. But Fulton 55, I think, is just, you know.
They were doing live stream shows a little while ago, I know, on Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't remember if they were just trying to take maybe donations
Yeah, I think extremes. I think that's what they were doing. And it was, and I think mostly they were doing that for the artists, you know, to give them an opportunity to, you know, do some stuff. But, and that's how a lot of clubs in other cities are doing it. You know, they'll be doing, they do live stream concert events, that, you know, money, the ticket sales kind of get split between, whoever, because I know, I think it's the Great American Music Hall, or maybe Slim's, or one of those places in San Francisco. I've seen a bunch of, you know, gotten ads or whatever for a bunch of their concerts, and a lot of places are doing it. So, I feel like that's going to be something that's something that kind of needs to happen here in Fresno soon. Is like that kind of. Like we need to get one of those some sort of like live stream something together, you know.
Oh no! Fuse Fest.
Well,
virtual Fuse Fest.
I don't know if I feel enough about it. I can hear it, like, behind your voice. Myself, but
yeah, somebody from Creative Fresno, get on that.
I've seen examples of people doing the live stream shows. And they seem to do really well. And I think actually, does anyone know if Bitwise is doing another one of their festivals?
I think I saw, I want to say
in November.
Yeah, I think they are. I think they are. They're doing another, what is it? I forget the name of it.
No Place Like Home.
Yes.
Yeah. So, which would be cool. But I mean, I think it would be, you know, it would be really nice to have some place like Fulton 55 or someplace like Strummers, where it's like, or even, you know, Tower or Warren, where there's full production. And it's like the band, you know, so it's, you know, filmed and I don't know. There's just thoughts going through my head. Obviously I'm not going to jump out and do it anytime, but.
Matt and Brian. Yeah. I mean, you guys basically work at two different, TV studios. You can say like, I would imagine you guys are both have similar challenges right now over the past 8 months of how you're running, being inside a studio and running a TV station. I don't have a specific question for you other than just how has that been and how difficult.
I think Brian's had a different level of difficulties than I do in being the boss over there. But I mean, with me, like I typically work out of a car anyway.
Yeah.
So not being in the building, like I only go in the building to edit my story at the end of the day. So, you know,
where do you work, Matt? Plug your station.
I work at a local station, a local TV station. I shoot the news. I cover the stories outside the studio.
At least plug your social media so people can find you and follow you if they want.
Yeah, you could look me up on TV's Matt Hackney. TVS Matt Hackney. On all the various Instagram and Twitter. But yeah, I do the morning show. So I start like 4 a.m. and during the pandemic, you know, just to limit sharing equipment, things like that, I get to take a car home now, which is kind of nice to just
that's cool.
Be able to start from my house, especially with what I do. Cause I was losing time having to show up at the beginning of my shift, put everything in the car and then head out. Whereas I can just like, I just text, you know, when I start my shift and I get my instructions and I go right away to wherever I need to head off to for the morning show. Yeah. And, I work out of the car and it's kind of nice in some aspects, but it's been a little lonely. You know, I don't see as many people and we try not to drive together if we can avoid it. And we wear masks and even in the building, a lot of people, they got laptops issued to them so they can do their job from home. But, you know, I can't do my job from the couch. You know, I have to be out in it. So, we've got some extra tools and things like that. Of like, they gave everybody like these big boom poles and microphone stands and all that, so we can set up the mic and still have that 6 feet, you know, distance from everybody. And so it's different, you know, it's a different way of doing things. You don't go into as many homes and buildings and things like that as we used to do stories. You know, we do, sometimes it's the reporter does all the interviews on like Zoom and records it. And then
right.
I'll go out and get video of a building or an event or something like that. And so, you know, we're able to kind of do double duty now with some
do
stuff.
Do you guys do as much of the, because I know this is like a staple of local news. It's like you get the reporter out of the scene, you know, even the scene's done, but like whatever, but the reporter has to be like out there. Is a lot of that, is that still like the thing, or has that changed some with this whole pandemic?
Yeah. And in the, you know, the beginning, you know, when we really didn't know what we were getting ourselves into, like everybody just took like the safest path as far as like what management was having us do of like, you know, we didn't go live a lot of the times, you know, we were coming back, you know, taping something and bringing it back into the studio or recording something from in the studio to put on the story. But a couple months ago, we started to kind of get back into it. And at least, you know, there was never the mindset of like you we're not doing these things anymore. It's like if it's safe, then we're going to try and do it.
Right.
You know, and that's the, you know, we try to make that a judgment of, can this be done safely? If it's not, then let's go, you know, to plan B. But
right, let's figure out a different way.
Yeah, but we're still getting out there. Like, you know, for a couple months, the morning reporter wasn't going live. And then now in the last definitely like month and a half, we've almost every day we're going out to some place talking about, you know, back to school and, you know, whatever other business might be opening up or things like that. And there's been, you know, there's been a lot of crime lately. You know, there's been some shooting and things that, you know, we've been out at some of the scenes that are still going on in the early morning. But it's, you know, it's all, I don't know. It feels the same. You know, I'm still doing the same job, but there's just like little differences that just feel normal. You know,
right,
setting
right,
up. Yeah, like the mic that I, you know, I give the reporter and they don't give back till they're done with it. And I'm wiping it off. Got the boom pole that we set up for interviews and that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's all.
That seems like it would be a big one, you know, because it's always, you know, it used to be just mic stuck in the face, you know. So like having all that kind of stuff seems like it would be a change anyway.
Matt, how annoying is it when you're out on a story and then some Yahoo from the Fresno Bee shows up and it's like, and he's like, oh God, here comes the bee.
You know what? Truthfully, I feel like I think it's just because of scheduling, but like I hardly ever, like I don't go out to scenes very often. I feel like I hardly ever run into to Matt out on the,
yeah, you know. And it might just be like I'm on this morning show schedule and we cover, you know, like run like a business beat. And so like the window that I'm actually like out working on a story is super early. Most people are just getting to the office. So I think Josh, you and I have run into each other maybe once in the last year.
Yeah, it's right? Very like, minimal. Yeah.
What was that? That was like the tower district opening up the parklets.
Yes, honestly. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, have any of you guys enjoyed a parklet yet? Have you sat in a parklet?
I have not enjoyed a parklet yet.
I've seen them all popping up around downtown, right? Like even like one outside of Cocky's.
Looks like there is one. Okay, have you seen the one outside of Cocky's?
Yeah, I walked by it a couple of days ago.
Does it not seem way better? Like better constructed and better looking than a lot of the other parklets, or am I wrong?
Is it the same company making them all, or is it up to the business to like get somebody?
So I know in the tower district, it's the same company, like they're going through a specific company. And that's why if you look at them, they all kind of look similar. I don't know about downtown, and definitely like the one at Cocky's, I feel like looks way different than the others, but I don't really know. But I just like looking at it, like the way that it was like set up, and kind of the crafting of it and the way it looked really nice. I mean, they all look nice, you know? But that one, I was like, kind of like, wow, they had a little detailing and everything on them. So, but I just walked by also. I haven't actually used any of them.
Yeah, I mean, even the one at like there's one outside of Bitwise, They're
on
Venice, and I feel like they've got like some plants on it and things like that. There's a little nicer, and I saw the one under construction outside of the Cosmopolitan. No,
Modernist.
Modernist. I keep getting them mixed up. But yeah, the Modernist. Yeah, theirs under construction. I mean, they, you know, they look nice driving past them. I haven't actually sat at one long enough to take in all the detail.
I think that the Tower District ones are going to have like planters and things at some point. I think there is like some, I think they're still like, you know, being, not that they're being constructed, but I think there's just as time goes on, there'll be some stuff added, but they're cool. I walked by the one, I don't know, the juice place or whatever, the smoothie place on Olive, right there, and it looked like people were sitting out having a good time. So,
and these are intended to be permanent, right? So they'll stick around.
Yes, yeah, which I think is cool. I mean, that's you know, especially on that strip. I mean, it's good, slows traffic down.
I don't want to be that guy, but like, you know, there's not a lot of room on Olive already.
Right.
And then, you know, you have a lot of traffic coming through, and now you're sitting there on the road. Like, you know, I don't know how safe these are if, like, you know, somebody was to drift over a little bit and make contact with one of them.
That is a question. And I don't think it's going to happen like anytime anyone's there. But I think at some point in the middle of the night, you know, someone's going to be coming down Olive Avenue, and they're going to be, you know, drunk, and they're, you know, one of those is going to get hit. I think that's, it has to happen. Like,
it seems like inevitable, but at least all of that section of Olive automatically is slow. You know, I mean, if you're paying any attention at all, you're driving, you're going slow through there.
Right.
But it, like Matt's point, it's like, it feels like I haven't sat at one yet, but if it feels like if I'm one sitting looking out at Olive and somebody stopped at the traffic light, I'd be like 3 feet from the passenger's face. I'd be like, hey, man, how's it going? Cool. Yeah, I'm having a beer. What are you doing?
Why don't we just shut down that section of Olive and make it the Olive Mall? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like, put planters in the middle and side, you know, all sidewalk. And that sounds like
artwork and stuff.
Yeah.
We could get a little tram that could go like,
yeah.
You know what'd be really cool is also putting up really like awesome stucco like siding on all the buildings.
Oh, yeah. The Tower District needs a full stuccoing. All just stucco it on.
Lock tower, too.
I think that'd be great. I think it would be perfect.
And then in 50 years, we can tear it all out.
Right. Like, and in 50 years, we'll put the road back.
All our grandchildren can be like, why did they do this? And be like, shut up. You don't know.
Right. No, here's what it would be. And I know this because this is my dad. They would be like, why did they do that? And then we would all be like, well, I don't know. I told them it was the stupidest idea ever, but they got their own idea. There's always my dad like, Fulton Mall, it was so good. I don't know why they ever closed it down in the first place. But
he's an original Fulton Street guy, or he's a Fulton Mall guy?
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, yeah.
No, he loved the Fulton Street because they would cruise. Then like once it shut down, then they all had to go to Kings Canyon.
He's like, how am I going to get chicks now? Fresno. Yeah,
they had to go to whatever other street. And so he was always like, it was the worst. I never understood what they did in the first place.
Was your dad cruising on Sunday night?
No, not now. Which is weird. I guess he probably
did. Wait, I thought I saw him on Belmont the other night. I was out there. It
would be driving like a 1999 Ford Explorer if that's
I'm sure there's a community Explorer community that's all about it. Yeah. Tricked out Explorers.
Yeah, it's all it's not tricked out either. So
What's he got under the hood there? What do you think he's
learning? Whatever it came with, but dust.
Oh, stock. That's cool.
Oh man. Well, is there anything we've kind of already started to devolve? So from the
just give me time. I'll pull this thing way deep into hole.
To tie it back in, so you come out to your Sunday night on Fulton as they're doing the cruising because there's tons of people down there. and you do your American graffiti.
There you go.
Oh yeah,
right.
That's
there.
That's a great idea.
I call Bob Falfa. I'm Bob Falfa. I call Bob Falfa. Nobody gets to be Bob Falfa.
You thought we could do that? That'd be great. Actually, that might not be a that wouldn't be a bad. A bad idea for someone to do.
Like 4 or 5 more Sundays till it's due. Like, you can totally pull it off.
Yeah. There you go.
Even tonight. But we're recording this on a Sunday. Somebody could go out tonight. Go do it.
Yeah. He's talking to you, Mike.
Okay.
because we know you're a Harrison Ford fan.
I am.
Yeah.
So I was going to say feel free to stick around, Brian and Matt, if you want. But we're going to take a little bit of a pivot, and we're going to do a music break. And we're going to talk about a local musician who recently passed away, who was really kind of instrumental in the scene, at least when me and Mike, we're really going out and seeing shows a little bit. So if you guys want to stick around, feel free. If you have interjections, you can also leave at any time that you want. But do we want to take a music?
Let's listen to a little bit of Eli Reyes' drumming work here.
Okay, and we'll just play a couple of the things and talk about it.
Matador slammed shut the door. Across lonely Quito, the broken hopes they churn up the floor. Well, he knew that it would end like this, with the fights and one final kiss. Well, enough that he knew could not miss, could make a look so effortless. With a thousand yard stare, the whispers that cut through the air. Across town, the bull's nostrils flare. Well, red like the hair that she left, the bed still soaked with her sweat. He bows to the crowd with respect as the roses they fall. Crowd fell silent, not a sound. Has the your forte collapsed on the ground. How to bite the bull and wait to pull away before it's too late. The matador, you know, he's nothing left to say. How to show her what she done, she let him run it through. And now the matador has nothing left to do. What is mistake? How could someone so strong and so brave?
There it was. That was the Westerns featuring Eli Reyes on the drums. So Eli died, I want to say it was last week or maybe the week before. He was 40. You know, it was big. It hit big for a lot of people, especially people here in Fresno, who were in the Fresno scene at a specific time. So this would probably have been what, Mike, the 2000.
Oh gosh.
Was it the 20 teens?
Was it
before that?
It was before that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still going on then, but I would say it was like whatever. 2000, I would say 2005 to above that around ish.
Yeah.
But
So he played with the bands like the Soma Holidays and Rademacher and the Fay Wray. And he was really like one of the guys who sort of the bands that were playing in town and like doing things like going out of town to play and, you know, getting recognized in like national kind of like a little bit of that national recognition. He was, that's where he was, you know, that's what he was kind of doing. And then he had, moved down to LA and was playing in some bands, in a band down there. I guess maybe had been sick or whatever. And I think he had a heart attack, and died. And then, there was a memorial, online memorial, just on Friday. A bunch of people got together and it was really nice. It was, there was a lot of, you know, there wasn't a lot of fans there. So it was mostly like people who knew him, family, bands he had played with. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike Mencias from, Rademacher was there and he played, a song and, some other people played, you know, music songs that Eli either had played on or you know, was a fan of. And then, you know, his friends got to say some things and have some memories. So it was nice. It was really, you know, it was a fairly moving tribute for a guy who I think really, you know, there's a lot of musicians in the scene that play, and for the most part, we all just kind of fade away, and no one gives, you know, like no one's going to remember in 30 years, or even in 10 years for in this case, you know. But he's one of those guys that, like, you know, people. He was just around so much and played with so many people that there was no. It was obvious that people were going to remember him. It was going to kind of hit big.
I don't know that you could name a musician in town that was more involved with, you know, had a tie to Fresno's bands than Eli did. I don't think he ever denied somebody, like if somebody asked him to drum for him, I don't think he's like I mean, he just loved being out there so much that he would just take on any project that could squeeze him in.
Right. If he had, he would find a way to make it work. If you needed someone to drum for him, you know, if you needed a drummer, you could go like, "Hey man, what are you doing for blah?" And he would say, I'm in, you know. And there were stories in the memorial where, when he was living in Fresno playing with a band down in LA, he would literally like drive down to LA to practice and then drive back to Fresno. You know,
I talked to him a couple times when he would do that. He's just like, oh, I'm going back down to LA right now. I'm like, what? You just came up here for this and now you're going back? He's like, oh, yeah.
And then I guess for a while, the Fey Rays had a bass player who lived in Reading and who didn't have a car. And once a week, Eli would drive up to Reading, pick him up, bring him back. They would rehearse and he would drive him back to Reading just so they could like have their rehearsal or whatever, you know. So he was just that kind of guy. He played with everyone. He was the guy who like at the end of the night, like you would go to a show. And at the end of the night, when the show lets out, he would always just be there on the sidewalk smoking a cigarette, like hanging out, you know. And it didn't matter.
Yeah,
it didn't matter where you were, you know, whatever club you were at, he somehow was there, you know.
Yeah, and he was.
And sometimes it would be like, go ahead,
Josh.
No, sometimes it would be like multiple places in a night, even, you know, would start out one place and see him. And then later on, you would be wherever else and he would be walking back by, you know.
He was just as much of a fan of like as being in a band. You know, you see a lot of musicians like sort of like don't wouldn't say a lot, but they sort of care about their band and then just head out. And Eli sort of cared about the scene and you would see him out just as much if he wasn't playing as if he was playing, you know.
Right.
And like he wouldn't be one of those guys that like, all right, my set's done. I'll see you later.
Yeah, I gotta go home.
He was just always out, and he just loved playing. I remember one of the promotions for the Fuse Fest. It was the famous Eli Fest where he played in five bands back to back to back to back.
He played in every band at the venue. It was Club One.
Yeah,
and. We specifically had to do it this way because there was no other way to get all the band. So we just, any band that because he was playing with, I don't know, whatever, five bands at the time, that all were worthy of playing at the festival. So we had to schedule it so that like, whatever. And didn't we ask him like, hey man, are you going to be fine doing this? Because it was like,
we did it for like safety concerns or like, you know, we're like, dude, like, can you physically do this? And he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so you were saying there was a...
No, I mean, it's just like, I remember for that, I think it was that year, we were just, Eli and I were booked on Dowdy's podcast. And, and Dowdy was infamously like, you'd have to sit through like 3 hours, kind of like Brian and Matt are having to do right now.
Oh, doing now.
Had to sit through like 3 hours of Dowdiness until he got to you. And it was like a Wednesday night my wife wasn't feeling good. And I'm just like, God, I do not want to do this. Like I was like, would have canceled, but Eli was like so stoked because he just loved talking about music and he was like so stoked to do this. And I was picking him up. I was sort of his ride. And he's like texting me like, oh man, when are you going to be here? I'm like so fired up for this. I'm like, oh God, I can't cancel this. Cause Eli was just so stoked about doing this. So I was like, okay, all right, I'll be there, man. I'll pick you up. And we did it. And I'm glad I did, but it was just because of Eli's love for just doing anything musically and talking about it was the only thing that would get me out of the house. And that was several times where like, you know, midweek shows, you know how those are, Josh, is just like just getting anybody to come out of the house for those. And he's one of the few people that I'd be like, oh, Eli's playing. Oh, okay, I'll go to that Tuesday night show at Club Fred for that.
Yeah. No, he was, there was a lot. I mean, it was, you know, the memorial was a lot of the memories of, you know, all the play, and they had a video put together and all that. So, So I would say for anyone listening, if you have your own memories, you know, you want to share them with us on Twitter or whatever, that would be awesome. Or just go and find whatever band that you know that he was in and listen to them and enjoy. So,
All right. Rest in peace, Eli.
Is there anything else
Well, I don't know anything if you else, can Mike? Talk about this, Josh. No, I should have actually asked you before, but maybe about...
Oh, put me on the spot.
I'll put you on the spot, man. McClatchy, this we got a little controversy going on with the McClatchy, like saying that they're gonna start pushing for, they want to see more view page views, and that they're gonna be pushing reporters to sort of be more concerned about page views than the story.
I mean that is true. So you know that's been true for a long time. You know, I don't know, a couple of years ago, we made like McClatchy made a hard pivot to being a digital news company and kind of just in a lot of ways moved away from the print product. And I think I can say this because it's 100% true. And really made an effort to focus on like the digital side. And so, your metrics are an important part of that. So what's happening right now is that, the McClatchy is trying to, or at least with some of the papers, and the Sacramento Bee is the one that's been kind of causing a little bit of the controversy. I put that in quotes, but they're trying to tie those metrics into the to merit raises and or you know, like merit pay and if there's layoffs and that kind of thing. And so the guild, the news guild there at the union, in Sacramento is pushing back and saying like, you know, this is not good for, it's not good for the company. It's not good for newsroom morale, and it's not good for, the community. And, right now, I guess, you know, I think they're still in bargaining and we'll see what ends up happening. We at the Fresno Bee have not had, this has not been the case yet. But we're obviously watching it, because if it's happening at the Sacramento Bee, it will likely trickle down to all the papers at some point. So, and you know, my take on it is metrics exist and they're good, you know, they're really good, especially for newspaper. I don't know. Matt might be able to talk about some of this. I don't know if he gets the same kind of thing on his end, with TV news, but you know, for us, it's nice because it gives us direct, like proof of how a story did or who's reading a story. And, you know, back in the day, it was like, you would just write something and, you know, whether how well it was received was kind of, you never really knew unless people were talking about it or, you know, you got letters to the editor. But now we can like literally look and see how many people are reading the story, how long they're reading the story, you know, what, like all of the things that you would want to know. So that's a very useful and good tool. The problem comes when that becomes sort of the main thrust of what you're doing. And that becomes the worry above some other things.
People don't always click on the story they need to see. They're clicking on the story with the clickbait title, right? The clickbait link.
Yeah. And I mean, and so that's kind of the worry that a lot of people have, is that like it's gonna that it fosters that kind of clickbaity thing. And you know, I will have to say, like, we can look and go like, sorry, dude, like this, the people click on those stupid stories. I don't know what to tell anyone about that, you know, and people don't like to admit that they do that, but we can clearly see by the numbers that that's what's happening. Is that good for journalism? Well, I mean, for news in like for a person getting their news here locally, probably not. I personally don't think, I mean, metrics exist. I think if we're going to use them, then there has to be some way to tie it into our how well we are doing our jobs. I don't think. The question is how that's going to be figured out. what percentage it's going to be, how relevant it will be to your overall performance. I think it should be used in some way, just because it's there. So like, it's kind of obvious, but from what I have seen of the proposal that McClatchy made, I don't think they're going about it. I think the way they're going about it is problematic. So
good way to, good way to paint you. Not
sorry.
No, you did a good job there. And not to get in trouble, but also, yeah, good.
Well, I'm yeah.
Sorry, I mean, to put you on the spot there, Josh.
No, it's fine. I think it is something that anyone who works in a newsroom, and again, I don't know how TV news is, but I know anyone who works in a newspaper newsroom, it's something that's on them. It's on your mind always. So, but in the past, it's always been on your mind, but they've always been like, no one's going to get fired if you don't get your numbers. Now, who, you know, and if you're, you know, if your pay raise is tied to that, that only really increases the sort of that kind of drive. And we know we can look and figure out what kind of stories do well. So we kind of have to judge like, well, I'm going to do these kinds of stories because they do well, because I need to get numbers, instead of looking at the news judgment of each thing. And the company would say, there's a system in place to take all of that into account. And therein, I think, is the question, like, is that system robust enough to keep us from just devolving into, you know, stories TMC. About Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton eating up at Yosemite or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, so. Really, this is just an extension of something that's a huge problem just across the world, just with news and information and how it's shared, and the internet being such a liberating thing as far as you being able to get all sorts of information from different sources. But the reliability of those sources and the ability for you to like stay in your little bubble of information where you're just listening to certain things and you know, it's not like it used to be where you had your local paper and your couple TV stations. That's where you went for information about what's happening in your community. Now you can get information from all these different places. Right. And people prioritize the free information versus stuff they have to pay for.
Well, just in a lot of cases,
from their friends versus what they hear from actual journalists.
And in a lot of cases, you can get information direct now. So, you know, if you wanted to, you could watch TV news or you could read a story from me about the creek fire, right? But you can also go on Facebook and Twitter and you can get all of the information that I'm getting mostly yourself, you know? And like, the reporter's job then is to delve a little bit deeper than the press releases and stuff there. But that information is out there. And so people can get it directly. So that's the other thing that we're having to deal with. And this is where like entertainment has really, been like hurt. I feel like, at least for local news, it's like, why does anyone need me to tell you what the Safe Heart Center is doing when you can get a, sign up for a newsletter and they'll tell you every single day what they have going on or, you know, so those are the kind of things like where you really have to rethink how we do news and how we approach things. So we can't just continue to do the same kind of stories that we did in the past because they don't resonate with people the same way because people can get it direct. Like, you know, Metallica's coming to Fresno, let's say. They can read a story, but they can also just go to the Metallica Twitter feed or the Metallica Instagram and they could see Metallica outside the same, you know? So, everything has kind of changed, so we have to change with that, and that does include looking at metrics and analytics and stuff. But the question is, again, like how do we prioritize that when we're talking about raises, when we're talking about potential layoffs at some point, and those kind of things. So, rambled. I apologize.
You're fine. I'll be watching you guys, keeping an eye on you, people. Right. start doing some weird stories, I'm going to be like, nah.
Well, I do think if they do propose that here in Fresno, and there's every indication that they will, we will probably do much like Sacramento, the Sacramento Newsbeat Guild, and there will be a public campaign to sort of let the company know. And you can actually find that the Sacramento Bee actually has a campaign going, and you can actually sign a petition that will go directly to the company to let them know, like, hey, you don't think this is a good idea. So if it is something that you feel interested in, whatever, you can find that and sign that petition. A lot of people already have. So thanks for bringing that up, Mike.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome. I'll just say that
local journalism is important. And yes, if y'all listening aren't subscribed to the Fresno Bee, you need to subscribe in one way or another, whether you're getting the print edition or just online, because, you know, these are real people like Josh who are writing the news. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, they actually delve into issues, and more so than, sorry, Matt, the TV news people do. And it's important. And we should, as a community, come together and support it.
Yeah,
because we're going to be real sad if it ever goes away.
That is correct.
We can't afford to lose the bee. So yeah, as a subscriber, and there's definitely,
you know, there's definitely space for it all. You know, so a lot of times it's like we want to pit people together. You know, TV news versus, you know, local, you know, this and local newspapers or radio or whatever. And I feel like there really is there is room for it all. So, you know, the Fresno Bee, we're going to delve into stuff. But you know what? The Fresno Bee doesn't have someone in a car at 4 a.m. going out to scenes, right? Like, we just don't. Right. But Matt is there to do that. So I think that's an important thing to remember.
I see him rolling in the morning some days.
Yeah.
it's all important. Yeah.
I think, you know, there's definitely room for it all, but yeah, we definitely need to support. So
yeah, we need all of it. We need the TV news, we need the Bee, and we need what happens over there at CMAC too, so for the community. Yeah, so
for sure.
Yeah.
I think we definitely need that independent, you know, we also need stuff like Mike, and we'll get to this in a second, but the stuff that you're doing both with your various podcasts, your blog, the Substack newsletter that you have going out.
Yeah, if you don't read posts about some guy on his walks talking about the bushes he sees on his walk, then where is Fresno Media going to be?
Where are you going to get that kind of?
You need me out there for this.
Oh man.
That's a good time to plug it up.
All right. So now's the time on the podcast where we plug all of our various things. So let's start with Matt and Brian, and just go ahead, run the gamut. You could plug whatever you want. You know, obviously Sweet Bet, but whatever you need to plug, take some time and do it now.
Sure. Well, I'll plug my day job at CMAC, the Community Media Access Collaborative. If you ever wanted to learn how to make your own podcast or your own TV show or any kind of media project for that matter, you know, we're a nonprofit organization that helps people do that through training and providing access to equipment and other cool opportunities to you know, create content and share it with the community.
And you guys have a ton of stuff. Like, I mean, like cutting edge kind of stuff where it's like, it's legit. So it's not just like, you know, the training is legit, the equipment is legit, the product that you're able to put out is legit. So, I point people your way for sure.
Yeah. We're not your traditional TV station. You know, we don't do, you know, the nightly newscast or anything like that, but we're more focused on working with community members, partnering with community members to create local content, and everything you watch on our channels or on our apps online, it's all, you know, 99% of it's produced by people for people living here in the Valley. Yeah. So it's a cool thing. You can go to cmac.tv to learn more about it and get involved. And of course, Swedefest too. You know, we want you guys to get creative and submit something for Swedefest by Sunday, December 6th, and then join us online or on TV on CMAC on Friday, December 11th at 7 p.m. And you can go to Swedefest.com.
Swedefest.com. Okay, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Matt, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, you know, could do a double plug for the Swedefest. You know, you'll never, you know, really understand that joy of being able to see, you know, this movie you made in your backyard with your buddies, seeing it on, I guess not the big screen, but on the screen, right? You know, being able to see it broadcast. It's a good feeling. It's fun to make, fun to have those memories. So yeah, Swedefest.com. Yeah, plenty of time to enter this year. And you want to check out my Instagram, TV's Matt Hackney, TVS Matt Hackney, random various behind the scenes of, you know, local news and scenes.
Yeah,
and
it's cool. Like I enjoy it. Like I enjoy it as being a guy who sometimes is out on scenes. And so a lot of times it's like, I know what that's about, you know. But for other people, I think it's cool to be able to kind of get a sense of like what it is, how it all gets put together, you know, the sausage being made or whatever.
Josh, what are you doing there?
What?
What are you doing?
So there? I will plug my day job at the Fresno Bee, FresnoBeehive.com. And I will plug, I don't know, you know, just you can find me on Twitter and Instagram just as under my name. I do have another podcast that I do. It's an Aikido podcast. So if you're into martial arts, it is called Aikido Discussed, and we're on all the platforms. It's a weekly thing. And then the various bands that I'm in, and you can find out about all those, but It'll Grow Back, Striking Originals, Big Balls, AC/DC tribute band, Downwinders. I keep myself busy, so.
Too busy.
Yeah. Maybe not too busy to do a Swede, that's for sure.
No, you do it, Josh.
You're never too busy to do a Swede. Come on.
I know.
Josh, I will say that if you're making a Swede this year, Josh won't start it himself. But if you need a Josh, he'll probably do it. He just needs somebody to.
That's 100%. I will definitely be. I will be in your Swede. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many years has it been since you made a Swede, Josh?
Oh man, I don't know.
Since Will.
Well, I think I did one with Jamie Holt after that.
When Harry Met Sally, right?
Well, I did the, but we did Silence of the Lambs one year.
Okay.
And then we did it in her basement with her little, I think we used her cat instead of her dog at the time. But but yeah, so I mean, that's been who knows how many years. Yeah, it's been a while. So it could be about time to get me back.
Actor for hire. You work for yeah. pizza
for free. It's not even you don't have to hire. I mean, you could buy me a beer.
Or yeah, get him some Zax or Tioga or something.
There you go. All right, Mike, what do you got to plug?
My new newsletter, newish newsletter now. FresnoFresno.substack.com. Hopefully gonna be. Wednesdays now I'm thinking get a weekly newsletter going. I tried to do it Sunday mornings because that's my favorite time to read newsletters, so I'm like that's what, but I just time what it wasn't working for me, so hopefully every right. Wednesday you'll see a new Fresno newsletter, which is sort of a roundup blog post. Newsletters are that's just kind of what they are, really. It's doing instead of a yeah. it's a roundup blog post, so check that out. And then there's the Fresno.com and also The Perfect Pour. Every Friday, a new podcast about craft beer scene with Nick and Matt. Matt being from Tioga Sequoia's beer garden runs that. So we got there's a lot of local talk mixed in with the regular beer talk. So that's a fun listen usually. And then get off my podcast Harrison Ford podcast to do with my cousin Trent, and we've been trying to do it this week, and we just have not been able to connect schedule wise. But I feel there will be a new episode out within the next week or so.
Are you going to talk about Sean Connery?
Yeah, we definitely got to talk about just because Indiana Jones's dad, amongst many other Sean Connery accomplishments. But we got to talk about that. And Harrison actually has a new project in the works. That is not Indiana Jones. So we got some things to discuss there. So there, I think that's
all right.
That's what's going on there with me.
Very good. Well, then I think that's it. I'll count us out. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.